This morning is Alden Management Services against Chow. Ms. Champagne.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kathleen Champagne, and I represent Alden Management Services, Inc. Your Honors, an agency's actions are improper when they are, one, unconstitutional, two, outside statutory authority, or three, arbitrary and capricious. We have all three here. This case began in 1995. In response to a telegram from the State Department, the Department of Labor investigated Alden's H-1A program and two attestations it filed, which stated that Alden would pay foreign nurses the wage rate for registered nurses. Alden did, in fact, pay that wage rate when nurses passed their licensing exam. As a result, the Department of Labor issued a determination letter assessing 2 years' worth of back pay for the time period covered by the two investigated attestations. The case proceeded through administrative appeals, where at every level, the Department of Labor's position regarding the length of the back pay period changed, and where the agency ultimately imposed back pay for an additional time period, never charged, never tried, never investigated.
Well, let me jump in here, because I'm looking at the administrative law judge's decision and order on remand of the 20th of December, 2005. And I know that one of your arguments is that you just never had a chance to defend with respect to the longer period of time covered by this. But to be quite honest, I don't see that at all, because the Administrative Review Board sends this case back to the administrative law judge. He issues an order setting out the issues on remand, and then, as he recounts, the parties have been working on a stipulation of the amount of back wages, and then he reports very happily, although the process took much longer than I would have liked, my patience has been rewarded, there's a stipulation. Now, had you wished to contest any fact about these expanded time periods, you just had to do so. You didn't have to stipulate. You could have asked for a hearing. That's why it was there on remand, and you didn't do it. So I don't see why due process is violated when you fail to take advantage of an opportunity that has been extended to you.
Judge, we disagree. The ARB's order was final. Alden had no choice but to comply with it.
It wasn't final on amounts at all. It was final on the legal obligation, and you could have brought that up as a question of law. That's not a due process issue. That's a legal argument. But in terms of the things that you talk about in your brief, who was involved, you know, how much they were paid, how much is the difference? If you'd wanted a hearing on that, the ALJ was sitting there to give you a hearing.
Judge, let me answer that in two parts. First, again, we disagree. The ARB was very clear.
He didn't have the power to give you a hearing?
No. And, in fact, the ALJ recognized that he was bound by the ARB's remand order.
No, he doesn't say that. He says the parties have been working on stipulations of the amount of back wages. If you had not stipulated, do you think he had no power to give you a hearing on the amount of back wages? Obligation was decided by the ARB.
That's correct.
So he couldn't reopen the theoretical issue, do you have to pay 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 6 years, some number of years? But amount?
That's not correct, Judge.
The
ARB decided.
You completely lost me.
ARB decided that Alden would be liable for the entire time period of the nurse's admission based on the provision in INRA that allows foreign nurses to remain in the United States for 6 years.
And that's a question of law that this court is entirely capable of deciding. What's the length of time to bring a claim? What's the length of time that relief? How should we interpret the statute? What's the problem?
Even the ALJ himself recognized.
Oh, he makes this crack about, I think there's a due process problem, but that doesn't mean there is one.
Well, and then stated he was bound by the remand order. And in fact, the
Department has got to go ahead and find the facts about what are the amounts due.
But the length of the back pay period was determined by the ARB. That was final. That was done. There was no further opportunity to brief or argue about that.
Maybe I can come in for just a second. Although Alden referenced the ALJ's comments about Alden's due process rights. A review of the summary judgment memorandum, a review of Alden's summary judgment memorandum, doesn't reveal a due process argument. And there has not been a showing of how the issues for the time periods outside of 630-93 through 630-95 were different, or what defense Alden might have presented to the expanded time period had it been given notice that the time period would be expanded. So I, too, am not sure how exactly you were prejudiced in terms of your ability to present a defense. And your silence on these points in the papers is somewhat telling. So we need some help.
Judge, we were not silent on this issue. If you look at the record, 40, pages 2, 7, and 20, that's the briefing in the district court where Alden specifically referenced this due process argument and explicitly requested as a basis for relief that the back pay period be limited to 2 years. The district court, in the second to last page of its opinion, explicitly recognized that Alden had raised this argument, explicitly recognized that Alden had requested as a basis for relief that the back pay liability be limited to 2 years.
Let me try it a different way. I certainly understand that Alden is making a legal argument that the back pay period was too long here. Perfectly within your right to make that argument if you wish. But that isn't the same thing as making a due process argument, which has to do with whether you had an opportunity to bring certain issues before the appropriate tribunal and the opportunity to have your day in court. And it seems to me before the ARB you had your day in court, before the ALJ you had your day in court. You don't agree with the outcomes. I understand that. That's fine. That's what we're here for. But I don't see this as a due process issue.
Judge, respectfully, the question is not so much what Alden did or did not do. The question is what the Department of Labor did here. And the Department of Labor made a choice in its determination letter back in 1996. They sought 2 years' worth of back pay, and they based that on the 2-year statute of limitations set forth in the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Counsel, let me tell you why I'm perplexed by your argument. A statute of limitations has to do with what remedy is available for the period before a proceeding begins. You seem to think that a statute of limitations controls the back pay period for the time after the litigation begins, so that if there's a 1-year period of limitations, then there can be 1 year of back pay for the time after the proceeding commences. That's not remotely how a statute of limitations works, as I understand it. The fact that the Department of Labor says there's a 2-year look back doesn't mean that there's a 2-year look forward from the time the complaint is filed. So how does this statute of limitations turn into a limitation on looking forward for back pay after the complaint has been filed?
This is how. As we pointed out in our briefs, INRA is silent on back pay period, on statute of limitations period. All it contains is a provision that says you can't have back pay. It doesn't talk about the length. So the statute is silent. You turn to the borrowing principles, and there the most analogous statute of limitations is the 1-year statute of limitations set forth in the H-1B statute.
You're not dealing with statutes of limitations are look back periods. They have to do with the remedy for the period before the suit begins.
Correct.
Your argument has to do with the remedy for the period after the suit begins. That's
correct. Correct. This is the argument. You look at the statute of limitations and the H-1B statute.
Well, look, I don't understand how a statute of limitations gets into this in theory. Maybe I'm just
well,
dense.
In theory, I can answer this in theory and in practicality here. In theory, the argument is that the statute of limitations provides the earliest possible beginning point, obviously, for any back pay period.
Right.
The liability and the remedy go hand in hand.
But it doesn't have anything to do with the ending point.
But here, if you look to the statute, the H-1B statute provides.
That's a statute dealing with visas.
Which is exactly what INRA deals with. And the statute provides that No investigation or hearing shall be conducted on a complaint concerning a failure or misrepresentation in an attestation unless the complaint was filed not later than 12 months after the date of the failure or misrepresentation. Now, let me answer your question, Judge.
Limitations, all right.
Exactly.
What does it have to do with what happens after the litigation begins?
In this case, this is what it has to do with. That statute of limitations applies here. And assuming for purposes of this argument that that State Department telegram was a complaint, that was in April 1995. Looking back under this statute of limitations, the back pay period would go back then to April 1994, which would mean it would end at the limitations period after the third attestation is filed here. There were only four attestations.
You were treating a statute of limitations as imposing a limit. And it's just not so. This issue has come up with the NLRB. The NLRB look-back period is, I think, something like 90 days. It's very short. But the Supreme Court has held that back pay can extend for periods of 20 years after an administrative proceeding commences. I don't see why this is any different.
Judge, certainly. Different statutory schemes provide for different lengths of back pay period. The point here, there is no provision set forth in INRA to address what the back pay period would be.
Well, that just tells you there's no limit.
There's no limit.
Statute of limitations tells you, right. You look back. Think of contract law. There's nothing special administrative law here. Contract law tells you that contract damages, your look back period is X. But then if the breach of contract continues while the case is proceeding, those damages can accumulate until the day the case ends.
Exactly, Judge. However, the Department of Labor never, again, this comes back really to the due process argument, the Department of Labor never charged that final attestation that would be the subject of what you're stating would be the forward-looking period.
Excuse me for a different point. When you say they never charged X, you seem to be of the view that complaints have to plead legal theories. Where does that come from?
Judge, it's not necessarily that the complaint has to plead a legal theory.
That Rule 54C of the Rules of Civil Procedure violates the Due Process Clause?
No, Judge. What our argument is...
But your argument is utterly incompatible with Rule 54C. It's true, this is an administrative case. But Rule 54C says, not clear you understand what it says, the prevailing party gets the relief to which it is entitled whether or not it has requested that relief in its pleadings.
Correct.
And if that's valid, I don't see any problem here. If it's invalid, we're perfectly willing to listen to the argument.
Can we try it this way? Can you tell us how the issues as to the expanded time period were different, or what defense your client might have presented to the expanded time period that would have been different?
Judge, that's a difficult question, and it's difficult because of what the Department of Labor never investigated, never tried. We don't know. And our argument is that, again, the Department of Labor made this choice in its determination letter to investigate just the 2 years of the attestations. Now, the argument is that it can't be that somehow due process was good enough. The regulations, there's no dispute here that the regulations provide that a notice and an opportunity to be heard is required before any liability can be imposed. That's black and white. It should remain black and white.
Then I don't understand how you came up with this summary of unpaid wages, Alden Management Services, which is the stipulation, where you've got all these different people's names, a different starting date, then up to... at the most 6/30/93. Most of these people end at 6/15/93, and then you've got another chart. I mean, I have Judge Rovner's problem. I don't know what it is you didn't understand you were supposed to be computing about these people.
Well, Judge, first, the stipulation on remand is not any admission of liability.
I know it isn't, but what's what would you like to have said if you hadn't stipulated about employee, nurse number one, for example?
Judge, it's unclear at this point. I mean,
but
maybe there would
have
been...
But you tell us why you were prejudiced by the way the department proceeded. And if you can't tell us what argument you were foreclosed from making, it's hard to see what the prejudice is.
Well, first, again, perhaps there would have been arguments. Maybe these nurses were all governed by individual contracts. Maybe, had we known that the Department of Labor was seeking back pay for all of these nurses for all of this time period, maybe there would have been arguments we raised. But again, the point is that...
And you decided not to, of course, because you thought a stipulation made more sense.
Well, we decided not to because the ARB had ordered that the time period...
No, the ARB didn't say that this first person began on 4/28/93 and worked until 6/15/93. Or that somebody else began in 11/19/92. The ARB said nothing about that.
Judge, we disagree. And even the Department of Labor, as we pointed out in our brief, recognized that the only issue before the ALJ was to determine the amount of back pay owed under the ARB's order.
Right. Addressing I don't think you understand anything that I've been saying, but if you don't, that's all right.
Judge, addressing the third argument, regardless of a limitation on back pay period, Alden argues that there was no jurisdiction to investigate Alden in the first instance because of the plain...
Well, why doesn't the ARB's decision in Beverly suffice as authority to treat the State Department as an aggrieved person?
Judge, because that decision was wrong. The plain language of NRA requires...
Plain language...
You are a courageous woman.
Well, the plain language, and moreover, the agency has been all over the board on this issue. The ALJ in the Beverly case actually held otherwise and held in favor of the argument.
But the ALJ is not the governing person. It's the ARB. I don't think the agency has changed since Beverly was decided.
Judge, our argument here is just simply looking to the plain language of that statute. It absolutely requires a complaint from an aggrieved person or organization.
Where does the statute say that?
In
the statute says that if a particular kind of party makes a complaint, then the agency must decide it. Where does the statute say that only if such a party makes a complaint may the agency decide it?
Well,
here's my point. You seem to be saying that a statute of the form, if X, then Y, has the meaning only if X, then Y.
Well, I think our argument is more that it's not necessary for Congress to withhold power when it plainly speaks as to what should happen. And here the statute states that the Secretary of Labor shall establish this process.
Secretary of Labor, if a private party complains, if an aggrieved party complains, then the Secretary must listen. The question is, what in the statute says that only if a private party complains may the Secretary do something?
It doesn't use
it's
the word only.
It's perfectly normal. The norm for administrative agencies is that they're entitled to enforce the statutes committed to their discretion, and they don't have to listen to private parties. If a private party complains to the SEC, the SEC can say, go jump in a lake. But the SEC has authority to enforce its own statutes. Here you seem to be saying that because the statute doesn't allow the agency to tell the private party to go jump in a lake, that it can't enforce its statute. And I don't see why one implies the other.
Well, our argument is that the plain language sets forth exactly what it is.
Plain language won't do it, right? The phrase, if X, then Y, is different. It's logically different from the statement, only if X, then Y.
But...
Right?
I don't think it's necessary to have in the statute only if in order to set forth a statutory scheme about what is to happen. The statute sets forth that a complaint must come from an aggrieved person or organization, defines what an aggrieved person or organization is, and states that the Department of Labor may issue regulations to further define that.
Which means only that if I decided to be a busybody and come in and tell the Secretary of Labor that I'm upset with the way Filipino nurses are being treated, they can tell me to go jump in a lake because I don't fall in that category. But it doesn't mean that the agency's been disabled from enforcing its own statute.
Well, Judge, this provision actually refers to complaints regarding misrepresentations in
Correct.
An attestation.
That's right. And so, you know, if some bystander happens to get wind of something, the agency has some constraints on who can complain from the outside.
That's correct. But, of course, Congress has set forth who that complaining party may be. And if they issue a regulation exceeding what Congress has allowed them to define, then that regulation is in violation. Your Honors, I see I'm entering my time for rebuttal. I will address any further issues on rebuttal.
Counsel?
Thank you.
Actually, your time just expired. Mr. Miller.
May it please the Court and Counsel. The Secretary's investigation of Alden in this case found that Alden brought 119 nurses into the United States, that Alden promised and attested that it would pay them the wage rate for registered nurses, and that Alden then reneged on that promise and ended up paying the nurses at much lower rates. And the difference between the wages actually paid and what they promised to pay was over $1 million.
This has been something that's been bothering me. What does explain the department's shifting theories as to the appropriate back pay period? And why shouldn't the department be limited to the two-year period it proposed to the ALJ? What is going on here? There seems something really kind of fundamentally unfair, shall we say?
We don't believe it was unfair in any way. We think that's part of the administrative process for different back pay periods to be proposed and discussed and argued on the merits. And in this case, there were several different periods proposed at different times. But we don't think that shows the process to be arbitrary and capricious.
There are different times, but they escalate. You know, they continue to escalate.
The period of years?
First we've got 2 years, then you've got the ALJ saying 1 year, then suddenly, you know, by the time we're finished with all this, we're at 6 years. What was next, I wonder?
We think that that process of talking about different periods really shows the administrative process to have been thorough and well thought out and exhaustive, which is really the opposite of arbitrary and capricious.
Exhaustive, certainly. This administrative process took 14 years, right? One might think that this administrative process was designed to exhaust the patience of everyone and wait until the nurses had died before giving them a remedy.
I really did think about jaundice versus jaundice when I was reading this, these briefs.
The lengthy case. Yes, it is an exhaustive.
There's no excuse for this delay. Is there any plausible reason why it took 14 years to resolve this case?
Well, I think it stayed in front of the administrative law judge sometimes for years at a time because the parties were proposing stipulations. And I think that's both parties involved in that. The details of what
sounds
was happening.
Sounds like a serious lack of competence for the ALJ not to set a time limit and move this proceeding. I trust the agency is doing something about that problem. If it has an ALJ who just sits around and allows the parties to dither, the agency needs a new ALJ.
We would agree that it was a lengthy process. I would like to say that we think the earlier stages of the administrative process are not the proper focus for the case. And that's because only the Secretary's final decision, which is the ARB's decision, is subject to review under the APA. And as long as that final decision was rational or not arbitrary and capricious, then we think the district court should be affirmed because that's the standard.
And there can be nothing arbitrary and capricious about taking 14 years changing, your mind. There's something that should make every citizen uncomfortable about what went on here. It may be legal and it may, fly, but it's and you're the messenger. I don't want to torment you. Or maybe I do. No, I don't. I don't.
I hope not.
But there is just something so un-American about this.
It's a long process, but certainly we think it gave Alden due process. And actually, it's ironic, of course, that Alden is now arguing it didn't get sufficient due process when it had many, many opportunities over and over again. And that's part of the reason it took a long time. But this case was remanded back from the ARB to the administrative law judge. And that's when Alden had its opportunity to ask for an evidentiary hearing if it wanted one. At that point, it certainly knew that the two additional years were at issue. And if it thought there was some argument that it wanted to raise, it should have raised it at that point. Even if the administrative law judge disagreed with that and said, no, I'm bound by the ARB's decision in the way that counsel's argued today, then Alden could have filed a second administrative appeal to the ARB to raise that issue. So that's another opportunity that they had to raise their arguments after they're aware of the two additional years. So we think there's the waiver of the forfeiture at the administrative level of the due process claim. And then in addition to that, we don't think it was raised in the district court either. And you can see that just from reading the district court's opinion. Judge St. Eva did a very thorough job of attempting to address each of Alden's arguments. But there's no mention whatsoever of the words due process anywhere in that opinion. And it's not surprising, of course, if you go back and look at the briefs, because you see that what Alden did is it made passing mention of the administrative law judge's comments about due process, but never actually presented any argument that there was a due process violation to the district court. Let me focus a little bit on the back pay period and as to why we think it satisfies the arbitrary and capricious standard. All that it has to be is rational. We think it is rational because because the underlying statute it issued here states that pay should be awarded as may be required to make a facility comply with the conditions that it attested to. So that's the standard that the ARB adopted. That's certainly rational.
So it's your position is that either 5 or in extraordinary circumstances, 6-year term of the visa is a self-limiting constraint on the length of back pay?
I think the constraint is what they attested to. Applying that in this particular case.
But it couldn't go back more than 6 years, I would assume, because you, at least as I understand these old H-1A visas, that was the absolute maximum Congress authorized. And I guess they keep saying that, in fact, it was 4. Maybe people weren't working that long. I don't know.
They're saying it's 4 because they only filed 4 years' worth of attestations. But it could go for the full period of the nurse's employment in the United States, and the court is correct, that can be up to 6 years under the statute. It's actually quite rare that it would be that long because to get that 6-year, there has to be some sort of extraordinary circumstance, but that's the outer limit. And we think that was reasonable. I'd also add that it's just rational because what this back pay period does is tries to make the nurses whole.
What it really does is try to deprive facilities like Alden from the incentive to hire foreign nurses by equalizing the pay with U.S. nurses, and you won't have that incentive fully taken care of unless you have the full period of the foreign nurses' employment.
Right, exactly.
They care that much about the foreign nurses, for better or for worse. But
right, and we think that is another rationale that supports, this is a rational decision by the Administrative Review Board. With respect to the borrowing theory that counsel talked about, we think their argument conflates statute of limitation and back pay periods. The court has already touched upon that.
Alden contends in its reply brief that you waived your contention that no statute of limitations applies in an action by the secretary. You haven't had a chance to respond to that. Maybe you want to.
I don't believe we've waived it in any way. We've argued that the back pay period chosen by the ARB is a rational period. I'm sorry, maybe I'm not understanding the court's question.
Well, if you take a look at page 16 of the reply brief, Alden says you waived your contention that no statute of limitations applies. The DOL appears to suggest that no statute of limitations is applied against it, blah, 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 blah. This issue is waived because while the DOL raised this issue before the ARB, the DOL did not initially raise this argument to the ALJ or subsequently to the district court.
Well, I think that gets back to the ARB's decision being the final decision of the secretary, and that's what's under review under the APA. So if the administrator in this case argued early on that the statute of limitations period should be a two-year period, and that was a different position. And that's certainly true, but that's not waiver in any sense, because it's only the Administrative Review Board's decision that is the final decision subject to review. And ever since that decision, we've taken the position that back pay period is different from statute of limitations. I think we've been upfront with that position ever since then. So I don't think we've waived it in any sense.
I don't know that the record is going to answer this or that you can answer this, but does this effectively put Walton out of business?
I'm not aware of some
phenomenal sum of money, isn't it?
It's over $1 million, but Alden is not a small business. The record does show that they own seven, at least just for purposes of this case, seven nursing homes. They may own nursing homes outside of that, and obviously they're bringing in many nurses. If you're bringing in 119 additional nurses to supplement your business, you have a fairly large business. So I don't think there's a larger number in the record that shows exactly how large their business is, but I don't think there's any evidence of this driving them out of business. With respect to the statute of limitations, I'd also want to add that even if the court were to assume, just for the sake of argument, that Alden's borrowing analysis was at least plausible to apply to this case, the Secretary is still entitled to choose a different period as long as it is a rational back pay period. The Secretary is not required to adopt the one that Alden wants just because Alden favors that, or even because one may make an argument that Alden's period is a better period if you were starting with a blank slate. That's not the way the APA works. Of course, the Secretary can pick any back pay period that is rational, and we think the Secretary has done that.
Are there statistics in the record that would tell us how often the Secretary uses the 6 years?
Well, I think the decision that the Secretary made in this case by the Administrative Review Board is when this decision was made for the first time, because there's no citation in that administrative opinion about earlier cases that had decided that issue. But I think starting at that point, the rule has been at the agency, and it has been that rule ever since then in 2002, that when applying the statute, the back pay period is whatever the period the nurses were employed by that facility. Let me touch on the directed investigation point a little bit. We think that, again, the Secretary's position that the Department of Labor can conduct a directed investigation without a complaint is not arbitrary and capricious in any way, for a number of reasons. Firstly, because the Secretary's own regulations specifically allow for investigations pursuant to a complaint or otherwise. In addition to that, the Congress expressly authorized the Secretary to publish regulations that would implement the underlying statute and address questions like this, such as directed investigations. And then the Secretary's determination was also rational because the legislative history of the statute strongly supports the notion that the Secretary would be permitted to do would be able to do directed investigations without a complaint. If there are not any further questions at this point, we would ask that the district court be affirmed.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.